Hello and welcome to The Unmissables, a weekly trawl through the world of popular culture, films, books, music. These are things we don't often discuss, but TV, we always do.
Musicals, we don't.
Musicals.
I don't think we've ever done music, have we?
Music.
Yeah, we did music. We did Harry Styles' album. But we've never done musicals because someone doesn't like them.
Mm, true, I don't. I can't stand a musical.
I mean, I'm not that keen either. Got me.
If you're wondering who these chattery voices are, they are Stephanie Seelan and Kay Ribeiro, my regular colleagues on this very special podcast, and they're very special people. This week, we're going to be looking at Benedict Cumberbatch is back on our television screens.
Where he belongs.
At last.
He's Benedict Cumberbatch. That's what he is.
Oh, very good. He is starring in The Child in Time, which is an adaptation of one of my favourite novels ever written by Ian McEwan, which came out 30 years ago.
Did Ian McEwan write Atonement?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, he did, which Cumberbatch was also in.
Of course he was. Yeah. Oh, he was a nasty bastard.
He's got history with McEwan. Mm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And early name drop, when I pointed out to Cumberbatch when I interviewed him about this programme that it was 30 years ago when that book was published, he said, oh my God, that makes me feel really old.
Oh God, you made yeah. Benedict feel bad about himself. Yep. Oh,
yep. Why would you do that?
It's just an accident. We're also looking at James Franco plays twins in the new David Simon, hugely prestigious 8-part drama, The Deuce, starting on Sky Atlantic and Now TV next Tuesday.
How can it be prestigious before it's come out?
Okay, this is like, you're talking, you know, in the world of like quality TV, you know, peak TV, this guy did The Wire, one of the most, some people say it's the best TV series of all time.
Oh, the people behind it. Sorry, I thought you meant the show, and I was like, how is that possible?
George Pelicanos, who's a brilliant crime writer.
He co-wrote the script,
yeah. Now, we should say in advance, Steph hasn't had time to watch this, which is fair enough, because it is an epic feature length.
But also, listen, don't be worried, Pogs, people on the ground, our listeners, because she will have views.
She will have views, yeah. but we've cleared it. She's not going to pretend she's seen it.
I'm going to imagine what I think about it.
That would be awful. Then, in sharp contrast, as I like to say, Deuce, Stage School is...
What is it?
I mean, we'll discuss it.
Don't worry, guys. I have seen that.
I've seen it, and I'm still not sure I know what it is. And Russia with Simon Reeve, the latest... what can only be described as a travelogue, in which handsome, I think he is handsome, isn't he, Simon Reeve?
He's more than handsome.
Okay, we'll get, yeah, let's not get you on that subject. It's a 3-part trek across Russia, which starts on BBC Two next Thursday, the 28th of September. But before we get to all of that, it's our traditional opening segment where we look at stuff we've just generally been watching, we want to talk about, and, you know, we think, oh, yeah, this might be interesting, this might be good, this might be bad. Stephanie Seelan, what has grabbed your attention this week?
Well, I had every intention of completing my semi-binge on Tin Star because I wanted to
discuss... Come on, what are you doing?
I know, because Kay obviously started binging, which I was very excited about, but...
Kay did the full Decca binge. She watched all 10 episodes.
She did the Decca binge. Listen,
there's no binger like me.
No.
But I got a little bit caught up with a show on the iPlayer.
Oh, here we go.
And it's the episodes are 16 minutes long. Right?
16 minutes.
16, I know.
That's
shocking.
A good length.
It's a really good length. Some say it should be the length of this podcast, but they're wrong. Right? It's called Sex, Drugs, and Murder.
Oh.
So, all the things that are right up my street, okay? And it's about sex workers in an area of Leeds called Holbeck in Leeds, which is the first kind of legalised.
So, this is not a drama, this is a.
No, this is.
A documentary.
This is a documentary. So, it's like 16 minutes and it follows these three women who are sex workers in this new legalised area of Leeds. It is fascinating. And you know how we discovered that the iPlayer is now doing the Netflix thing where it clicks onto the next thing at the bottom?
Yeah.
So, I was like 3 hours deep. Watch the whole thing, it's incredible.
How many eps?
There's like 10 episodes. It's amazing.
Wow, I didn't know.
You should have watched The Deuce, and you would really like it if you like sex workers are your thing.
But these women, they're like, they're it's like, if you think that your life is bad in any way, watch this. It's horrendous.
I never think my life is worse than a sex worker.
It's honestly horrendous. I'm really amazed by it because they're always taking drugs in it. They've all these terrible boyfriends. Yeah. Like, they give. There's one of them that gives you like extreme detail about like, just like, I've got this one guy who basically he pays me £2,000 and he just massages my feet for an hour because he's just got a foot fetish. Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. And then, like, the, you know, the fucking crazy weird
what?
Things like...
Wait a minute, just
Kay,
you
Kay is jealous
I know,
now.
I know, it's
two
insane.
£2,000 to touch someone's trotters.
Yeah.
Kay's having a
it's
career.
Making me
but,
have a
but also, now this
and
is...
I hate your feet, but...
Kay, listen to this, it's so strange, right? So that's, that pay, man pays that amount, right?
Just the
same woman.
Him.
Yeah, but this same woman was like... She
with
gets,
his hands.
She gets paid... She has paid £300, right? And £300 is the going rate for someone to poo on you. Isn't that...
Oh.
I'm sorry.
Oh,
it's true.
She went there.
It's disgusting,
apologies,
but it's true.
Apologies.
Just saying what happens.
Yeah, oh,
anyway,
well.
It's gritty.
Adult
it's gritty
content.
Is all I'm
adult
saying.
Content.
I don't know, it's gritty.
It's gritty. But don't you think that's weird? Like, foot massage is more money. I just... Anyway.
Oh, my God.
Find out all about it. It's
well,
great.
Or don't.
Gritty.
Gritty, yeah. But Kay's right, you need to watch The Juice because there's a big crossover there in prostitution themes.
Mm. Oh, yeah, well, yeah. I do like
no,
that.
She's stuck on this.
Oh,
Kay,
no.
I hope you've been watching something nicer than that.
Well, listen, liar. No. I'm talking about the, what is it, ITV?
Yeah, it's ITV.
ITV, there's one of the brothers.
Yeah,
William
the
brothers.
Williams
brothers. Yeah.
Their drama.
The one that's winning in the ratings, we should say.
Oh, yes. Did we do a pop-up?
Now, okay, fine. Now, I need to issue in a bit of an apology because... A couple of pods ago, we said we were going to do a pog poll for the people on the ground to vote and tell us if you've been watching Relic or Liar. Now, it fell to me to
which
do this.
Which are both written by the same brothers and are at the same time on ITV and BBC One on Monday nights.
Exactly. Boydo there with the stats. So it was my job to put it up, right? And
on the Twitter?
On the Twitter, right? So you could all vote because I know that's the first thing you're going to think of doing after you've watched the programme. And... truth be told, I fell asleep. That's what happened. So
yeah.
We don't
wow.
have stats for you right now, but what
I mean,
we do 10 have
10 o'clock
is the...
on a Monday night, it's exhausting, isn't it? It's,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, hello, it's first day back
that's
at school.
Your bedtime.
Yes,
so
it is my bedtime.
You fell asleep.
Yeah. But I can just tell you Liar's better because I liked it.
Well, what I want my... We also had a little chat. We do have a little WhatsApp
pod group. Yeah.
About this thing. And we were having... And basically...
Which no one
me,
replied to.
The only
I
point
replied.
Of the poll about Liar versus Relic was to see who decided which one to watch immediately after.
Yeah.
So it was going to be a hot, you know, immediate kind of response to find out. But now we've got the actual official ratings. And
oh, what are the official
I can
ratings?
Tell
was
you.
I right?
Oh, fine.
Was
someone
I right?
did
was
the
I
poll
right?
for you. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's
the poll
point.
Is
yeah.
already pointless because... In actual ratings terms,
yeah,
Liar was the clear winner. Over
See,
Relic.
I told
yeah.
you.
Yeah, well, no, I agree.
Well,
I
no, I think if we
because
go back
Liar,
to
because
ago.
Liar's got bigger stars.
Mm-hmm. Joe Frog,
Ewan
Griffith.
And it's also a much easier concept to sell, isn't it? It's like who's lying, who's not lying on this
he
date.
He said, she said,
basic.
He
more
said,
basic.
She said.
Not
I'm
more basic.
Basic. I just an easier premise to explain. Whereas Relic is deliberately confusing and weird, backwards telling. Hmm. And people aren't keen on Relic. I'm still championing it. I still think it's good.
I'm a little bit roly eyes about it. But
so anyway,
Liar,
you've watched. So where
I've
are you
watched,
up to in
I've
Liar?
Watched three episodes.
Three?
Oh my God!
So
have you watched episode
three?
No, because I've been caught up with Sex, Drugs, and Murder.
Okay, well you need to get on this because episode three is a real turning point. And
oh, is it?
Yeah, it is.
So what's aired so far?
One and two.
Two is just aired. If you're listening to this, listeners, on Tuesday when we come out, two aired last night, effectively
okay,
on
so
ITV.
Can we mention something about two? Can I mention a point about two?
Is it a spoiler?
No.
Are you sure?
No.
Let's have a little think. Run it through your mind.
Well, I mean, you give your forewarning to listeners, so if they want to maybe like fast forward a bit
okay,
for the next
fast
I don't
forward
know,
a bit because I'm just
going to
mention
seconds.
One word earring.
Oh, that's fine. That's
when
fine.
He finds the ear, I was like,
that's not a spoiler. That's
turned
fine.
It all around for me.
That was
amazing.
Yeah.
That was it.
Kay's right, yeah. So at the end of three.
Something happens, and like, there's a couple of points in the third episode that I was like, this is going a bit off the boil for me. And then this one thing happened, and I was like, right, I'm gripped again.
Okay, yeah. I'm going to do third.
There's a new
the
clarity.
Is
three,
there?
Yeah.
Ooh,
without wanting to spoil it too
okay,
much.
Great.
Yeah, let's just say. But it's interesting because people on Twitter. Like who were talking about it. I saw one very experienced and admired producer. She didn't like the idea of this series because it takes. We kind of touched upon it when we reviewed it because it's using a rape situation as a kind of to grab your attention and to build the tension within the show. Mm. And she feels that's intrinsically queasy, and I can see that. Mm. And then other writers, like TV writers, she had a chat with them, were joining and going, oh, yeah, I don't really want to deal with that. And I felt like saying to them, having watched through episode three, well, actually, if you can just make it to the end of episode three, I think you'd be all right, and without wanting to spoil anything. Mm.
But, hey, Boyd,
yeah,
you've got beautiful eyes. What have they been...
My
lately.
My hazel eyes.
Such a flirt.
Listen, stop.
Yeah, well, I've been watching. I'm going to quickly mention a film screening that I went to because it's not the film isn't out for a while, but it kind of touches upon, you know, last week I was talking about Mother, which is out now. Yeah. The psychodrama horror.
Kay and I need to watch this together, I feel.
I don't think either of you
I
can.
I don't
take
think
it.
I can handle it.
Well, you I went can. To see this other film called The Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Oh, God.
What?
You, that sorry, is not the a film. Title You're making of the it film up. Is The Killing a of film. A Sacred
yeah.
Deer.
Yeah.
What?
It's a very exciting film. It stars Nicole Kidman, part of the whole Kidminiscence.
Oh, the Kidminiscence yeah. is so good.
You're part of her incredible year of being in Only Good Things, and she's brilliant in
really?
This.
Really? Sacred deer?
It's not a, literally, that's a metaphor. So that's a phrase. You don't thank actually, there's
God.
No deer killing
thank
in the actual film.
God. Oh, is there, no, is, killing. Any, killing. Is there any deer in it?
There's no deer in it. There's
right, just, misleading.
There's killing okay. killing. So that's an old kind of, I think, fable about the killing. You know, don't kill us. There's a sacred thing. You don't kill us. I don't
just
know.
Just don't kill deer.
Anyway,
nice.
It's directed by Yorgos Lanthimos.
Him, yeah.
Yeah, your friend.
Yeah,
friend
my
of mine,
friend of mine.
Who did direct The Lobster. Did you see
oh,
that?
That's
yeah,
great.
Now
Colin
you know.
Like
now
that.
You know.
Now I'm into it.
And The Lobster was kind of a huge, big awards film last year with yeah. Colin Farrell and lots of other people. And I think this is better. Immediately, this is better than that. And Farrell's back in this with a huge beard playing a doctor.
Right.
And I'm not going to give it a full in-depth thing because it isn't out for a while. But all I'll say is, oh, my God, it's perhaps even more of a test of your, like, if you can cope with the what's going
oh,
on in
no.
it. It's all about this weird, mysterious kind of teenage boy who forms a friendship with Colin Farrell. You're not really sure why and what he's up to. And then it all gets really grim in the second half of the film when Colin Farrell's two children, one of whom is like in her mid-teens, I would say late teens, his daughter, yeah. and his son who's in his early teens, suddenly lose the power to walk. And you don't know why.
This sounds
and they're
horrid.
Holed up in this in hospital and they can't move. And they're kind of like slowly being paralyzed and you don't understand what's going on. And then it gets even darker and more horrible.
Darker than that?
Yeah.
So this is the second time Farrell and Kidman have been so they were together in The Beguiled.
Well done. Sophia yeah, and Coppola. They're brilliant together. And it's you know, it's a brilliantly made. It's like Mother, but Wives. It's like Mother. It's another like maverick kind of allegorical fable, distressing thing with really good people in it. Being
do
brilliant.
You find out though? Because I can't watch it unless I actually find out why this boy is in paralysis.
I can't address that. I can't address okay. that at this stage. Okay. That'll be a spoiler, I think.
Okay. Well, it's an offer.
The other thing I was going to quickly mention is that I have been watching is I'm Dr. Fostering in a big way.
Okay.
Do you know
way.
What? I need to catch up.
You need to catch up.
Really?
So tonight, if you're listening to this on Tuesday when we come out, is episode 3, and that one alone, episode 3, a lot happens.
So Lyon and Dr. Foster, episode 3, are crucial for...
Crucial, yes, yeah. absolutely, yeah.
It's the crucial third episode.
It's the crucial third episode. And
it's a theory
it's incredible.
On.
No, no, there's no big theory.
It's just a fact.
Maybe I'll hatch a theory.
No, episode 3 being a crucial episode.
The theory
yeah.
of 3?
Yeah.
Yeah, of the power of 3. Mm. But it is absolutely magnificent. It's so... People are nitpicking a bit, I've seen on Twitter and
social
media.
Oh, there's been a lot of that.
A lot
yeah.
of that, yeah.
Well, what's but the problem?
Just saying it's a bit ridiculous.
Yeah.
And like,
oh. But I think it's all psychologically real. I think everything that happens in it, and there's another feminist thing going on as well, which I think after tonight's episode, I'm trying not to spoil it, but I think there'll be even more of a backlash from some women about it.
No.
Yeah, for what she does in it. I'm not going to say your face.
Oh, there's a feminist backlash. I don't want there to be a feminist backlash.
The mini feminist backlash. And I met one of the producers recently, socially. Again, I'm not gonna
socially.
And she was telling me that they all get it on social media. So because people have such big responses to this show, it's such a kind of hot button program because it deals with so many different things that people get very angry about it. And I was like, oh, God,
I think everyone needs to calm down.
Yeah, everyone needs to calm down. It's fiction. Yeah.
Talking of
it's
Twitter.
Not real life. It's fiction. But I think Foster is great.
One of our super pogs did mention that actually we were incorrect when we said, well, that Transparent was the best Amazon original series because he mentioned Bosch. Did you see this?
I did see this.
So then
I haven't seen Bosch.
Bosch is so, so good. So Titus Welliver, who is the one who's also is also an artist, not a watercolor artist, just an artist in general. Anyway, and then Titus Welliver liked that tweet, actual Bosch, which is very exciting.
Very
can
good,
can Titus
it?
Send me a box set of Bosch?
Can I think that can be arranged.
Can we get Titus to listen to the podcast?
Has he reviewed it on iTunes?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. That will happen. Don't worry.
Okay.
He's got that will follow.
Yeah, I know. I do like Bosch. So I will address that very point. I'll say I really like Bosch. I like Titus. I think it's great. Very well made. Good show. But I don't think it's as good as Transparent. Transparent up being up there. Transparent's just completely unique. There's nothing like it. Whereas I think Bosch is a really good example of crime drama. It's great. But There's nothing like Transparent out there. That's, so that's why I would. So I would respectfully disagree.
I think there's going to be some comment on Twitter next week that disagrees with your
decision. Bring on the backlash.
Bring it on. Comment away. Let's move on, shall we, to the meat.
Let's do it.
The four parts of meat.
Yeah, it is four.
The four-course meal of meat.
Ooh.
Starting with probably one of the TV drama highlights. And I'm not saying we're saying that already, just in terms of, you know, high profile. Again, I'm going to use the word prestige. So this is The Child in Time. It's a one-off feature-length 90-minute adaptation of Ian McEwan's prize-winning novel of the same name, adapted by Stephen Bouchard.
Oh.
Yeah.
The Boosh.
Starring Cumberbatch, Kelly MacDonald of Boardwalk Empire fame even.
Not Broadwalk Empire.
Boardwalk. Yeah, I'm just slightly mispronouncing all
Broadchurch?
Words now.
But do you know what you're just doing?
Kate's
you're just adding an R into
yeah.
everything, which is yeah. really unusual. Yeah. Everything's getting an extra
yeah.
R.
Stephen Campbell Moore's in it. Right. Stephen Campbell Moore. And Saskia Reeves. Now, I can explain what it's about. What was anyone to go ahead and describe the story? Yeah, go.
Okay, so Benedict Cumberbatch plays a children's author. He's a father to a little four-year-old girl, and he takes her out shopping to give the mum a bit of a break. And he takes his eye off her for mere moments while he's paying the bill, and she goes missing. And it's the devastating repercussions of this one fateful moment, which, I mean, everyone can relate to, just taking your eye off the ball. And she goes missing, and the whole story centres around how this couple, him and his wife, played by Kelly MacDonald, cope with the loss of their child. And there's also a simultaneous kind of subplot about he belongs to a committee, doesn't he? A children's committee.
Yeah. A government committee.
Yeah. Which is, actually, you can explain more about that, because
yeah,
I didn't think
it's interesting.
That bit
interesting. Right, yeah. So there's
really
a whole, there is
so
a
much.
Site. So in the original novel, which we should say, so it was came out in 1987, in the middle of Thatcher.
Mm.
And Ian McEwan, the writer, being a kind of lefty liberal, I mean, I speak as another one.
Yeah.
but a large theme of the novel is it's set a few years after that as a kind of, in a kind of dystopian version of right-wing Thatcherite Britain.
I feel like you shouldn't say dystopian, because I don't think that word belongs in here at all.
Oh, God, yeah, I forgot that you hate dystopian.
But this isn't.
So that's the novel. No.
Okay, yeah, all right.
This is set in the present, pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't really specify, I don't think, but it's kind of set more or less in the present. But it still tries to distill the political side plot thing and theme from the original novel. So you do get... The children's author, played by Cumberbatch, is on this committee looking at education and children and all the issues revolving around, set up by the Prime Minister. And we see the Prime Minister in it. And his best friend, Cumberbatch's character's best friend, is in government and is a high-ranking...
Also literally his agent.
And were his publisher.
Yeah.
His publisher and his wife's his agent. Is that right? I think it's played by Saskia Reeves.
I thought it was the other way around.
Okay. Yeah, so he's the kind of publisher. And if you think that's a bit weird, there are MPs, aren't there, who own publishing companies.
Mm.
I mean, it happens. Mm. So that's believable. But there is this whole kind of slightly political side thing going on. And the Stephen Campbell Moore character, who plays this high-ranking government minister who's also Cumberbatch's best friend, does have a whole breakdown thing going on, kind of parallel, doesn't he, to the main action.
But somehow intertwined.
Intertwined,
as well.
Yes, yeah. Intertwined.
He's searching for the child within.
Yes.
And they're looking for the child.
Yes. But this is, you know, the novel itself is like a very, is kind of quite an epic, sprawling thing, which is quite difficult to distill down to 90 minutes. Have you read the book, but just checking
out? I'm going to sound really stupid. I didn't even know it was a novel.
Oh. No, I mean, it came out 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Only people as old
before
as me.
Before you were born.
Yeah. But only people as old as me.
Oh,
only people staring
there.
50 in the
face. I was six
You're
when
not
it...
Boy,
I was six when it came out. But
okay.
Well,
I mean, you could have read it.
I really could have.
Yeah, especially
But
when
I should
it,
at least know about it, but
yeah,
I don't.
You should have
anyway,
done.
Anyway,
how old were you,
okay,
when it came out?
Which year?
1987.
She was seven.
I was seven.
I'm not trying to get you to admit how old you are.
Ah, that's fine. I was 7 years old.
Well, what's your excuse for not reading it?
No, I did read it.
You did? Oh, good.
No,
excellent.
She didn't read it.
Forgetting the whole novel thing.
Yes.
What does it come across as a piece of pure television drama, Stephanie Seelan?
Okay. I am basically, this is probably my most favourite thing that I've seen this year. Mm. And completely and utterly the most perfect thing that I've seen with my eyes, which is what I text you straight away afterwards. I felt so many different, every different type of emotion watching this. I was completely transfixed. I think Benedict Cumberbatch is... This is going to... I'm not over-egging this. He's magical in this.
Magical.
He puts on a completely magical performance. It's subtle, but perfectly pitched. I love Kelly MacDonald. I think everyone in it is amazing. I mean, I there are not enough good things. This is such... It's such a traumatic, horrendous thing that happens. And it is eking out of their every pore, this pain. But it's just beautifully, beautifully done. And the fact that... It's such an awful situation, but you're kind of like, you're so transfixed and you're so happy to sort of be there with them watching this whole thing unfold. It's just wonderful. And I think everyone will love it.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting because it's not in the interviews that I did with him, and we also got quotes from Kelly MacDonald. She particularly talks about how when she read the script, the thing that really amazed her, because she hadn't read the book, is it's not depressing.
So no, it isn't.
It's actually weirdly uplifting.
That's what I mean.
And also, it just feels very real. It doesn't feel like they're acting particularly like it. It feels like Benedict Cumberbatch has lost his daughter.
Mm. It's incredible.
The power of him. I, as I've said before, Sherlock is a thing that I like, but I found really difficult to follow, and I had to watch it a couple of times. But I love Benedict Cumberbatch in films. This, for me, is one of his greatest performances ever. It is just beautiful.
Okay, converted to Cumberbatch?
Well, I love him in Sherlock, your favourite thing, obviously. But, like, no, it is incredible. It's like you go on that emotional roller coaster with them, so you feel their desperation. They're like, the thing about this as well is that the couple, they kind of have separated.
They're estranged at the start.
They're estranged, but the love is still there. Right. Do you know what I mean? And so it's so hard because it's almost their internal battle about it, because obviously there's a lot of bitterness and recriminations and stuff like that. But there's still this overriding love, which is just so beautiful to watch, and you're kind of willing them along at every stage, like, oh, please, just, you know, see this through together. Because he admits, and I think it's like one of these moments I was like, oh god, this is how it must be, is that he's never stopped looking. She hasn't given up, she's resigned herself to it, because she has to within herself. But his whole thing is like, he's not actively looking, but he's constantly out the corner of his eye, and that is so sad to watch.
Yeah, the one of the moments actually which I thought was really beautiful is when she says to him, why do you keep looking? Stop looking. And he was like, I can never. Why do you want me to stop looking? And she says, because you always disappoint me. You never bring her home. And I just thought it was just. I cried, but I was also like, it sounds silly, but it was like sort of happy tears, because it's really peaceful.
Yeah, the genius of it is. I agree with you. The genius of it is that it's completely. They don't make it melodramatic.
No, there's no screaming or shouting.
Well, there's a kind of little bit. I mean, it's brilliantly adapted. So it kind of starts off kind of in the present, if you like. So they are estranged. She's moved to some village somewhere, isn't she? Miles away. Mm. He's still in London in their home.
She's moved by the sea.
She can't bear to be in the home. You kind of get that feeling where, you know, they brought up their daughter until she disappeared. He's still there. And he's got writer's block, and he's dealing with that. So they're completely miles apart physically, geographically. And then his best mate moves away to the country with his wife, the MP slash publisher character. So he's kind of isolated, isn't he? And you get that. And so a lot of it's going on in his mind. He's having these visions of her and flashbacks to the moment. Whereas Kelly MacDonald's trying to deal with it just by kind of going away and removing herself from the situation. And I find all of that, and when you're reading in the book, sorry to go on about the book again, it's like, oh my God, this is all so real. Mm. It's every step of the way. Everything that they do and say to each other, that's the brilliance of it. It feels incredibly believable.
It's so real.
And the brilliance of this film is that they've done that in the film version, in the TV version. So everything that Cumberbatch and MacDonald say to each other and the way they look at each other, it's all brilliantly modulated, isn't it? It's like
it's also a tale of like not giving up hope and this glimmer of light in abject darkness. It's very uplifting. But what I'd say is, if you're feeling emotional like I was, just be warned, because...
Oh, it's emotional. I mean, it's an emotional roller coaster, but it's not depressing. That's the
depressing, but you will cry.
And I think it is one of his best ever performances, because I think he'll get BAFTAs and things, because
he will.
Well, again, when I interviewed him, he made the really interesting point that this is the character he's played that's the closest to him, that he's played geniuses. He's got another, he's playing Thomas Edison in a film coming up, he like invented electricity. Sherlock, he played the other genius in the other film.
It's so funny you say that, because I honestly, this sounds really ridiculous, but I really wanted to believe that was close to what he was like.
This is exactly what he's like.
I just because you completely right? Yeah. You fall in love with this person.
Yeah.
And you fall in love with him completely.
He's an absolutely lovely, funny, charming guy. And he's playing a lovely, funny, charming guy who's been in this extreme situation. And it's like, what, you're following him, what happens to him, how he copes with it.
At the end of the year, when we do our pod awards, which I'm suggesting now, I think he will definitely be a contender.
Do you know what?
And she's brilliant as well.
What do they call themselves? What's the official title of his kind of crew of followers, his fan base? What do they call
Cumber? Some people say they call them Cumber bitches. But
I don't agree with that. They shouldn't be called that.
Just fans,
they
Cumber fans.
They are going to go wild for this. They're just going to go wild. And I think it's just going to grow, this fan base, because of this. I mean,
should say he does have sex with Kermit Dog at one point. Spoiler alert. I mean, I don't want to bring it down to basics.
That is a spoiler alert.
I mean, there is slight.
You've got down to the basics.
That is quite a big spoiler.
I want to make it. Well, there's slight Cumberbatch nudity. I'm not saying whether it's in present or past, but there is scene of Cumberbatch.
He's teasing you, fans.
There's Cumberbatch nudity.
There's Cumberbatch bum.
To some extent. Is there bum? A little bit of
there
bum.
There's side bum. It's and then at bum. One point, he has to take off a number of clothes. And
right.
It's
yes, he
magical.
Does. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Magical clothes removal.
This whole thing is magical and amazing.
Just to make it clear, we're above all that basicness.
We're not basic Cumberbatches.
It's one of his greatest performances because he's so brilliant.
Yeah. I'm giving it 5 stars. I'm getting straight out the doors there with that.
Before I could even ask you how many stars you're giving it, because obviously he wants to move on to finish in the
beginning
of the hour.
No, because I want to be the first to give it 5 stars. Yeah.
And as I said, Sheboy, the thing is,
If you don't give this 5 stars, because you have said it's one of the greatest things you've ever seen.
No,
ever.
What this is my point. Actually, I know sometimes on here I like give low star ratings, and I sometimes say 0 stars. For me, this is we should reserve 5 stars for this kind of thing, because this is absolutely 5 stars, 100%.
At least there's consistency, because sometimes you just say something's terrible, then you give it 4 stars.
I don't want to bring it up, but you did get called out on that last week.
I am not going to explain to you again why the dystopian drama Electric Dreams thingy got.
We had
4 stars.
Complaints about that. Let's move on.
It's a 5-star for me. It's one of our few triple fives, I think.
It's sensational.
Sensational. The Child in Time is on this Sunday on BBC One at 9 p.m. Please God, don't miss it. That's why we call it the Unmissables. Mm. Okay.
Absolutely.
Just in case you were wondering.
And another, as I've said already, highly prestigious drama project is The Deuce.
I haven't seen it. Do you want me to describe it?
Yeah, go on.
James Franco and Maggie Gyllenhaal star in a steamy drama following the legalisation, legitimisation and eventual cultural permeation of the porn industry in 1970s New York.
That's brilliant. I mean, that is the official, we should say, Sky press release.
No, that's not. That's
that was
just
from Steph's head. Don't be out.
What I thought it was about.
But I was going to quote that myself, because it's a quite a kind of, it's quite a Ponzi press release, isn't it?
I like the show and everything, but that is a total ponce.
There was a lot of long words there. I was
cultural
a bit
permeation. That's a
Look,
bold
it's about
phrase
pimps and prozzers
use.
In New York, 70s New York, and that's it in a nutshell. I should have written that press release for them. I would have economised on words.
It is, as you say, about pimps and prostitutes. Mm. Street-walking ladies.
And Maggie Gyllenhaal and James Franco in it.
Yeah, so...
Right.
Gyllenhaal plays one of those very prostitutes. And she's quite an independent spirit. She's quite
candy.
I mean, she's kind of a veteran of it compared to some of the younger ones. And she hasn't got a pimp. She refuses to deal with pimps and stuff. So you meet a lot of the characters in this are pimps. Mm. But she walks alone. She has her own clients, and she just deals with
them
herself.
She's my favorite, actually. Mm. She's very empowering. Like, they're the natural line. No one makes money on my pussy but me. Love
there
that.
There you go. There you go. Which is
definitely got to have that explicit lyrics thing now on this podcast, because you said the word pussy.
Oh. I think since you've already brought up... like
Scat, Mandy.
I thought we were going to edit the poo thing out, actually, so...
I don't think we can. I think we mentioned it too often.
Well, I've said it again now.
So, I think the explicit is... That disappeared about 2 minutes in.
Okay.
Right, so, we're still being explicit. So, Maggie Gyllenhaal is a prostitute, very independent, spurning the pimps. And she's about to... I've watched episode 2 already, and she's about to get involved in the porn industry as well. So it's kind of about the birth of the porn industry a bit in 1970-71 New York. James Franco plays twins in it.
Why?
Vincent and Frankie Martino. Vincent is like a bartender. Well, he is a bartender. It's not like a bartender. He is a bartender. And he's got kids and a wife who's weirdly frustrated with him and kind of wants to sleep
around. Hardworking husband.
Question.
I hate you.
Go on.
Why? The twins thing.
Well, it's a good question. I mean, can we come back to that a little bit before I'm going to carry on describing it?
Right.
Because I'm going to address
in
the twins issue
time,
head on. Because the other twin is more of a dodgy dude who's kind of owes the mob loads of money.
Gambler.
And as you'll see played out, it's kind of about how these twins get involved in the porn industry because the mob is running the porn industry that will play out over the eight episodes of the whole thing. So it's kind of like if you have seen The Wire. So The Wire, David's the thing that David Simon's most famous for doing up until now. He's done other. He did Tremé. Did you watch that?
I know it's Tremé, but I'm a big Wire fan.
So so The Wire was like a depiction across five series, wasn't it, of Baltimore, the different kind of crime, of famously serious series like The Docks.
Yeah. And it was a bit boring. The Docks was
the
not
boring
good.
Docks
that sounds,
season.
Yeah, a bit snoozy.
It did The it Press. Good, it showed you the newspaper industry, the media, and the police and the criminals.
Very
and you
thorough.
Kind of met. Yeah, very thorough. Well, that's the point. It was like an attempt to show all the different social
sounds like it did.
Strata of what of this city. And why, and you know, the morality of them or the immorality of them and the power relations. So it's a hugely ambitious thing. And this, I feel, I've only seen two episodes.
It's distilled.
It wants to be a similarly ambitious, sprawling thing with all these different characters, all these different layers of society, but focusing on the porn industry in New York. And it's called The Juice because the area around 42nd Street was known as The Juice, so on 8th Avenue. And if you've ever been... Around, I mean, I'm not old enough to have been there in 1971, but I am old enough to have been to New York before it was all gentrified and Disneyfied. Mm. And, you know, back I was there, you know, I used to go there a lot. The first year I ever went to New York was probably like 1989, 90, I think. And it was still pretty hardcore. Like Times Square was full of, you know, porn cinemas and.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and you
1990.
Would see and
now it's
see,
just got the M&M
and
shop.
And a few years, exactly. Yeah, it's all about M&Ms now.
Yeah.
Then
M&M
Rudy
World.
Giuliani, famously the mayor, he was the one who kind of cleaned it all
he
up.
He cleaned up New York,
cleaned
Rudy.
It all up. Yeah. Now it is. You can, and it's one of the safest places on earth now. I think it's like you know. So it's partly all about that. I think this whole thing. Anyway, I've witted on enough. Kay, what did you think of The Juice?
I really liked it. I think it's very glossy and It shows a more glamorous side in parts to the whole prostitution. I think in terms of in terms of like the Cadillac, you know, and like the appearance of the pimps. And
what's
stuff.
The Cadillac?
Oh, like one of them drives a Cadillac and makes a big deal of it. You know, so it is, I think, but yeah, I know what you're going to say, but it is also very grim and shows the bleaker side of it.
Right. I wouldn't say glossy. I think it's visually, it's
visually glossy it is. I think it's very nice.
It's visually
it
looks great, but it's kind of trying to show you the gritty underbelly of New York.
Yeah, which
it's stylishly filmed.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
sorry. Right.
That's what I meant.
Completely.
Glossy.
It's stylishly made, isn't it?
Yeah.
I totally agree.
But also,
with that.
But also slightly with the element of like you know how the pimps live this kind of amazing life, you know, with their Cadillacs and stuff like this, and there's obviously the prostitutes who are doing the hard work, so to speak.
Oh yeah, of course.
But yes, I think the twin thing was an unnecessary gimmick.
Yeah, I think I might agree with you there. Yeah, so I it is weird because the thing is gritty and yet visually enticing, but it is so much about it's so real. It's all about the realism of the situation and trying to show you what it must have been like to be a prostitute in 1971 in New York, or get involved in the porn industry, or be a pimp, or be on the edge of it, like James Franco's both his characters. But you're I was slightly taken out of it by this twins thing. And you see them separately in the first episode, kind of all the way through. And then suddenly they come together. They meet each other in this bar, and you've got the two Francos. And you're like, oh, this is a gimmick. So it just took me out of the story, which is very unlike the whole David Simon ethos. You know what I mean? Right. The whole ethos of The Wire and all of his shows, really, is how real and believable they are. But suddenly you're confronted with two James Francos and you're like, I did find it weird.
Differentiated though? So within the first few minutes, there's Vincent, the good one, is punched in the face.
Yes.
And so then he gets this bandage and a bruise and then forevermore, that's your way of just...
Even then I found that a bit clunky.
I thought it was completely clunky. I was like, has he got a scar on his head? Oh, it's him.
So all I'd say is, and so that episode one, which is like a 90-minute feature-length special.
Right.
And then I watched episode two, which is an hour, and I did actually... I was fine with it. There's slightly less Franco in episode two.
Okay.
And you know.
Is there more Candy? Maggie, because I love
Maggie Gyllenhaal. She is brilliant.
I think she's the best thing about it.
Yeah, she's the best thing about it.
Right.
And her character is intriguing. And there's a brilliant scene in episode one where she's with a teenage boy or a young guy. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's late teenage, isn't he? But he's been taken as like party for a big party by
it's
his
like
mate
an initiation
for his birthday.
For him. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
an initiation thing. And that's a great scene.
Yeah,
that's
that is
quite
a fantastic
cliched idea, but it's so brilliantly done.
What is Maggie Gyllenhaal's character's relation to James Franco's character?
None yet, right?
None yet.
Okay, fine. So it's just independent stories.
Yeah, and they
floating
will.
Along.
Yeah, they're independent stories floating along. That's the thing. Yeah. So and then in, as it goes on, they will have contact with each other. Yeah, I think it's kind of how it's play out.
It's a scene set at the first.
Okay, fine. And but Maggie Gyllenhaal's getting into the porn industry, and assuming James Franco's character is going to have something to do with the porn industry as well.
Yes.
So they'll come together through porn.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
For equality, you see a lot of naked
flesh. As so many people do.
From
so
the female side of things.
That's
but
how
also
we got together.
James Franco's bum.
Yeah. Yeah, it's equal opportunity. And none of
nakedness.
It's gratuitous, really, is it? It's like, you can't really show a prostitute
I was
in action without
say you can't.
Maggie Gyllenhaal getting naked to some extent. But it's all done very tastefully. It's non-exploitative. But, I mean, it's a clear
what's
quality show.
What's it kind
show.
Of like? If you're going to, if you like this, you should watch this. What's it like? The Wire?
In its way, I mean, it's more, slightly more like, you know, Tremé, which I didn't really like very much, which was about kind of post-Katrina New Orleans, wasn't it?
Right.
But it's the David Simon thing. I think he's done this in probably everything he's done, including The Wire and since, is showing a society, showing a world, world of 70s porn in New York, through character rather. It's not very plot heavy, so at the moment you're just getting to know everyone in it kind of thing. That's what he does, and so I would compare it to that, really. It's just his method of doing it. I don't think it's difficult to compare it to something else. Maybe it's a little bit, you know, there was that Martin Scorsese rock music drama that wasn't Vinyl.
Yeah, it's a bit,
and I think partly why, because this is an HBO Sky Atlantic show, this is an HBO show like Vinyl was, but that had a similar setting.
Was it 80s?
Yeah, I think it was 80s. No. Was it late 70s, 80s?
I thought it was late 70s. But
whatever it was, it's a bit similar to this, just in terms of the whole milieu, I'm using that word.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, okay.
But this is better than that. Because that was a bit silly.
But guys, how many stars?
I would give it 4 stars. I think I think it's really gritty, but I found it depressing, I have to
say. I'm going to question that with you because I feel like you're not giving it me a 4-star vibe from your face. You definitely want to give, or is Boyd influencing you with his face?
Oh, no, look, I've written definitely. It here. Look, on a in my
paper. Okay, Kay's never influenced by me.
I just feel like she didn't like, it that much. Okay.
No. I thought it was very good, but I just found it overall, it's quite relentless in the nature of, you know, the prostitution. Okay. I just found it quite
weary. It's not a fun
and bleak,
fun breezy watch.
No,
okay.
But there is
you wouldn't
wit.
Watch it with your mum as well, so don't think about that.
No, I've got. I'm going to get my mum to watch Murder, Sex and Drugs on the BBC iPlayer.
Oh, the real.
Yeah.
The real deal. Yeah. 4 stars for me as well. Yeah, maybe 4.5. Maybe
ooh,
4.5.
4.5.
Yeah. I mean, potentially 5 by the time we get to.
Wow.
It's just you know, you're just getting to know it. It's a slow burn.
Okay.
Don't expect fast pacey.
No, it's a burn.
Yeah, it's a burn.
And the normal episodes are going to be what, an hour?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That is The Deuce, starting on Sky Atlantic and indeed Now TV, Sky's streaming service where you don't need a dish. Okay, you can just subscribe.
Ooh,
yeah.
That's handy.
On Tuesday, next Tuesday at 9 o'clock, and every Tuesday after that. Let's move on.
Oh God.
Perhaps one of the sharpest contrasts we've ever had between
total
two television
handbrake
programs.
This is
guys.
The sharpest contrast.
Stage School starts on E4 next Monday at 5:30 p.m. So it's kind of like their tea time youth. It is for the kids. It's on at tea time. We should remember that as we review it. It's kind of like a TOW-y version of like the Fame School.
It's scripted. It's a scripted reality show about
structured
stage
reality.
Structured reality, yeah.
Structured.
Well, semi-scripted, structured, where they give them
like Made in Chelsea and those shows.
Yeah,
so like, structured reality.
Yeah, they give them like a situation, a scenario. And, but I think some of it's probably improvised, isn't it? But
I don't think so.
Well, okay, you explain what you feel the show is.
Well, now you've said that whole thing about it being tea time, which is, you know, when I was at school, Neighbours was on at 5:37, and I was, you know, we were all obsessed with Neighbours, right, when we were younger. So would this satisfy me in the Neighbours slot? Possibly, if I was that age. But basically, it's a load of kids all dressed in black, with various different outfits, but they're all in black, at this stage school. Remember, these two women, who I'm not sure what the history of these two women are. Are they famous? Were they stage
stars? No, I think they're just...
Donna and Bonnie. It's the D&B Academy
in
of
Bromley.
Performing Arts in Bromley.
In Bromley, the bright lights of Bromley, and basically it's a load of incredibly irritating children and, teenagers running around.
Young people.
Screaming, dancing, and trying to prove that they can make it, and I just don't think any of them are going to.
Any of them?
No, I don't think any of them. There's a point in it where there's one girl. One of the themes of this first movie is this girl called Lucia.
Lucia.
Yeah. Right. So
I know she's not
like,
using my notes that I've given you.
So, sorry.
Her name is on the notes, right. Steph.
She sings Ghost by Ella Henderson.
I mean, I work my fingers to the bone printing these notes and you don't even use them.
I'm so sorry.
You didn't control print for nothing.
But basically, she has to. They say, "Oh, do you want some help with your audition? You're going to have to sing in front of Donna and Bonnie." And they're like, "Oh my god!" She's like, "Oh my god, that would be amazing." And then she stands up to do her singing, and then all the music comes in the background.
It's
and like honestly,
a music video.
I honestly thought
they have two like music video.
Yeah, but he said the guy who was helping her, who's like, "Oh my god, you didn't need any help from me. Can you teach me a thing or two?" And I was thinking, no, she does need help from you because that wasn't that good. She wouldn't get four yeses on X Factor. And then actually when she does sing it, she's all right. And the other kind of storyline is a guy who's tasked with directing a small group of boys in something, and then he makes this little thing called Josh. No Direction.
Yeah. See what they did there?
Yeah. And it's just, it's all a bit shit, isn't it?
I found it very confusing. I was so, this is the second series, we should say, of this program,
I'm always
believe it or
amazed
not.
When these things just get, like, recommissioned.
This is the fluff slot, the reason we're doing it. We like to have, every week,
something lighter. Something lighter. You know,
we've had
dramas,
had children disappearing. Oh. It's all very, so we like to have, a little, you know, light and shade. This is the fluff. But
still
I was confused.
Yeah.
Immediately. Yeah. I didn't know whether the, because you've got these two women, Bonnie and Don, who run the stage school. I thought the whole thing might be like fiction, like a, you know, like, does it really exist? So then I had looked it up, and indeed, the DNB Academy of Performing Arts.
Is it real?
It's real. It 470 Bromley Road. If you want to go there.
Oh my God, pod outing.
I mean, I think most people could go there because you don't have to have any talent to be there.
I mean, I don't want to, yeah, well.
Well,
but it's like if you can't get into, because there's the Fame School, isn't it? What's that called? The one
Sylvia Young.
The Brit School.
Where Ed Sheeran didn't go famously.
Right. But there's that one. Right, there's that one, which is like, you know, proper. I mean, I'm not saying this one isn't proper, but it comes across.
Come on, just be honest. It isn't proper.
It comes across as not very proper.
It's not.
But and then everyone in it though. There's all these. So now I'm feeling, did the kids have to, like, did they audition to get in? Do they pay money to be part of
it? Is it full-time school?
It's a three-year, I'm looking, when I looked it up online, it's like a three-year course in performing arts I wonder whether, I don't know how it works.
Well, it's broken up to juniors, because one of the things is there's, like, a junior school, isn't there? And, like, a senior school, which seems to have some 20-year-olds in it, which I found very confusing.
Yeah, same.
And so one of the other things is they have this kind of dance-off. They're gonna make this dance team, the DNB dance crew, and then they audition a load of the older people, and they're like, you just haven't brought it. We're going to get the juniors in. And then they get a load of these annoying, precocious young people who'll be like, I've been in Matilda, I've been in this, I've been in Billy Elliot. And then they do some dancing, and you just think, oh, God.
Kay, if you were 13...
Yeah.
And you came home from school and you turned on the E4 channel and this was on. Would you? Can you even put your mic? Would it be alright?
Yeah, I'd be into this because when I was growing up, there was a drama, like a drama school thing. I can't remember. I was trying to remember what it's called the other day. There was one, and I really avidly. Right.
I mean,
that.
Fame, the TV show, was kind of. You
yeah,
know,
but more recently, like
really taking it back.
I've already said I'm staying 15 in the first. With but, Leroy and, you know, whoever.
Oh, good God.
Classic.
Yeah.
No, but I would watch it. What I can't make out is, are they... Because as Steph has pointed out, some of the acting is
terrible,
a little hokey.
Terrible.
Yeah? Are they acting badly or are they just bad actors?
Well, that's a very good point. So here's my...
You know, like Joey and Friends?
Because the whole thing really... But the whole thing for them really should... This is the thing. The whole thing for them... is an amazing opportunity to be spotted. They've got a show about a school they're training.
Yeah.
They should be acting their asses off.
No, but are they trying to act badly?
Why would you
want to look bad?
You mean in a kind of like jokey way?
No, are their characters meant to be bad, you know, like in any way?
But they're not characters. That's the whole point. They're actual students. That's what's so messed up about this.
Yeah.
It's like the singing is bad, the dancing is questionable, and the acting is horrific. It's like...
My main complaint about this program is it doesn't have to be it is annoying, it doesn't have to be like this, does it?
It could have been
a fly on the wall documentary series
about this world
which would
have been great,
which would have been fine.
I don't quite know why Kay's
holding my forearm, everyone.
Do you remember Pineapple Studio, how it's just a bit more real?
But Pineapple was structured reality, wasn't it, as well?
Yeah, it was better than this.
Yeah, but also there's a difference between Louis Spence or whatever, you know, camping up for the cameras.
There were some characters on here that were trying to do the same.
Yeah, I suppose so. I just think I would like quite... I wouldn't mind seeing a fly on the wall documentary series
that
about...
That would be so interesting to me.
Yeah. Yeah. About a stage school. But this was just too contrived and too cheesy and too annoying.
Because it is a stage school. So actually, probably what does go on there is probably great.
Yeah.
Why have they added this layer of, like...
I feel like some producer somewhere has gone, and clearly E4 has gone, what we can do is we'll give the kids, literally like teenagers, because I can't imagine anyone over the age of... I'd pick 13... I can't imagine any 15-year-old being impressed by this. But, I mean, they've gone, look, 13, 14-year-olds will love it if we give them a TOWIE-style thing set in a stage school. But I think, actually, they'd just rather see a thing set in a stage school with real people.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my strong feeling about it. I couldn't bear it.
No, 23 minutes it is.
So it's on weekdays, starting on next Monday, on the E4 at 5:30 for, like, about 3 or 4 weeks or something. Yeah. How many stars?
I'm going to give it 2 stars, and that's a stretch.
Yeah.
I think it's a 1-starer. I'm sorry.
I think it might be a one from me.
Yeah.
It was excruciating. But maybe, I know, without wanting to sound patronising, no, I'm not even going to say it.
Don't
I was going to
say
it.
Go on,
there's no way of saying,
no,
if you're a 13-year-old girl, you might like it without sounding patronising, is there?
But I've said it. I don't know whether they... Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It's no Degrassi Junior High, which is what I... It's nothing like that.
Finally, in the meat, we have the dessert of Simon Reeve. And I feel in many ways, no greater treat can there be for Stephanie Seelan than to watch Simon Reeve.
She's been banging on about him all week. Yeah.
So he, if in case you don't know, he specialises in travel-based documentary programme series for the BBC.
Yeah,
he's done Turkey, I think. He's done the equator.
He's done India.
He's done Tropic of this and Tropic of that.
He specialises in travel and being gorgeous. That's what he specialises in.
You really have the hots for him.
I think when I watch him, I feel happy, I feel clever, I feel travelled. It's like all those three things are just great. Why wouldn't you want that?
And isn't this like the ultimate for you? Because not only does it feature him travelling around, but you're also obsessed weirdly with Russia as well.
I love Russia. Now, I say that
not in a
I love Putin way, because obviously he's a very bad man. Yeah. Right, okay. I visited...
You're not like Donald Trump.
No. God, no. But I am fascinated with Russia. I love Russia. I've been to Russia.
Have you? When did you go to Russia?
I went to Russia when I did my master's degree.
Oh,
and,
stage school.
When I went to stage school at the London College of Now Communication, I believe. Mm. And we went to Russia to visit basically loads of different magazines. It was incredible. We went to Russian Vogue, which was unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah. So anyway, I went to St. Petersburg. Beautiful, beautiful. It's an amazing, beautiful country. And also, because I love Simon Reeve, this is perfect for me. So he travels around, and obviously Russia is a gigantic landmass. It's impenetrable.
It is, I believe, the world's biggest country.
It is the world's biggest country.
Correct.
Now, I'm just going to read you some facts that you could glean from watching this, okay?
It's like he's
Russia,
in the
room. Right? It has a quarter of the trees on planet Earth in Russia. Can you believe
no,
that?
No, I actually do find that surprising.
Right, okay.
And I watched the documentary.
Okay, right. Right. In it, he also goes hunting for Siberian tigers, okay? Which were an endangered species. They're kind of coming up. There's a guy in it who's looking after Siberian tigers. A Siberian tiger, okay, with his and the length of his tail, okay. So imagine a Siberian tiger is half the length of a London bus.
Yeah,
isn't that a great fact?
It's a big tiger, a ruddy
big tiger. I can
see
that. That's a great fact.
Yeah. I've got a thing to say about the tiger, but remind me in case I forget.
All right,
I've
got a point to make about the tiger. Okay, and also he makes a very, very good point about global warming in this. So it's just got everything. Mm. So he goes to... Go on,
I thought we were going to mention that. I thought the fact that... Did he say Siberia contains a fifth of the world's landmass?
Yeah, I
is
did.
That right?
I have got that written
like
down
that.
Here.
Yeah.
Hold on. Siberia is a 12th of all the land on Earth.
Oh, a 12th.
Boyd, that's still a lot.
Still a lot. A bloody lot of land, Kay.
Yeah,
go on.
Sorry, I just want to bring you back to my note I've just written tiger. You said to remind you about tiger.
There's this so there's this interesting bit where he meets the tiger filmer, guy who is out there in
so a guy is a, is a landowner
massive forest
he's a landowner, and he's taken it upon himself to help save the Siberian tigers.
Yes,
and he's a tracker.
There's only about 500 of them, I think, or something. And so there's this bit in it, and I'm complimenting it, but it's unusual to say the least, and I wonder whether there was a kind of
like
editorial discussion about this. Basically, instead of us seeing Simon Reeve seeing these tigers in the natural habitat and being filmed by his crew, he's watching on the guy's laptop the footage that he's managed to film, which is incredible, of the tigers. Mm. You know what I'm saying? I thought it was
bold. Hold on. No,
to
no,
show,
no, no.
Instead of getting actual footage, which must have been their dream,
right?
They just, it's basically quite an extended scene of Simon Reeve looking at a laptop.
Right, hold on a minute.
No.
I'm saying it's a good thing.
They go to try and track it. Obviously, they've got limited time. Yeah. And a big element of this, which I really liked, is the fact that at every turn, they're being hounded by the police.
This is my point. They're keeping it real.
I'm just to interject. I wasn't as taken with this because I think there's better people for me doing travelogue shows.
Oh.
Joe Lum, big number one. But having said that, it got interesting when the police got on his case.
The police is fascinating.
Yeah, the feds was
the modern version of the KGB.
Yeah, but that's my point. So the point I wanted to make about the tiger incident, where he's watching him on the bloke's lap, is it keeps it real. I was impressed. So I think another program might have gone, no, we can't use that because it's just you looking at this footage on a laptop. No, who cares? But actually, I thought that was real. Do you know what I mean? Because the guy filming it was interesting.
Which is what you said about Joanna Lumley when she went to that, remember that site? Similar. And it was all misty and they still like had her talking.
Yeah, and had her hair going all over the place.
A realness to the travel.
But this is even more real. So you also see when the police, when they start noticing the police following them and the stopping them and taking his poor driver away. That's all
shown. To a psychiatric hospital for 5 hours.
And again, that's all shown very carefully. And they show them hiding the camera in the and again, this is all stuff that in another more glossy,
they wouldn't put it in.
Travel show wouldn't put it in. So that's my favourite thing about it, is the realness.
And he also goes to visit a remote area of Russia where there are still reindeer herders.
Yes.
And I just love the fact that he makes all these points about climate change, and you should be concerned because basically the reindeer, because of global warming, the reindeer are running out of the lichen that they need to eat in the wintertime. And you know what that means, don't you?
No reindeer soup?
Christmas presents.
Ooh.
Reindeer soup? Could you say that? Okay, firstly, no one
had no idea.
You can't soup a reindeer.
If you could see Steph's face at the mention of reindeer soup. But also, even more importantly than that, that he shows those
more importantly than no presents at Christmas because Santa Claus has got any reindeer.
Beg your pardon, the future of humanity is at stake. These are huge craters.
Well, he's always very good at just seeing the real point.
Yeah. Well, he's making the point that this is like literally the manifestation of global warming, and there's these huge craters where the ice has melted.
It's a bit like Unreported World meets Joanna Lumley's Russia. That's what it's been like. And
you're
I've done the hand cross, the arm cross
with
to
a bit of you know that politician's Inconceivable Truth. Inconvenient truth.
Oh my god!
I'm gonna take it upon myself to get every title slightly wrong. I know.
Inconceivable
from now on.
Truth.
The incontrovertible truth.
Inconvenient truth.
Yeah.
It is a bit like it's absolutely fascinating, and you come away from it feeling clever and also feeling like you've been on holiday with Simon Reeve. And why wouldn't you want to do that, because he's just so wonderful?
I think he's really good. I agree with you.
I'm really surprised you didn't like this as much.
Yeah, she wasn't bothered.
No,
I could tell.
No.
I was sitting next to her while she was watching, and I could sense there was a certain, you know,
I was
not
watching the clock a little bit, I gotta be honest.
There was at one point some talk of us not doing this, which I was raging about.
As my mum would say, he seems a lovely chap, but I just wasn't
do you not
engaged.
Feel clever after you watch it? Do you not think, oh god, I've really learnt loads of stuff?
Yeah, perhaps.
And also, there's not very laissez-faire about the facts.
There are only 500 of these tigers. You've learned a twelfth of the planet.
The bus thing about the bus.
And also, he goes to like a disused army base in that remote part of Siberia. He goes to this disused army base, and he actually says that some scratch
this
marks
is a
have
disused
been made.
Army base.
No. That Wolverine's been there. Wolverine. It was a Wolverine.
Oh my god, that character.
Oh,
right, cool.
Not Hugh Jackman. A Wolverine has made some
an actual one. Actual Wolverine. Yeah.
So I'm predicting here. I don't want to put words. Are you giving this a 5-star review?
I am going to give it a 5-star review because this is great. Do you know what? I watched it and then I watched the Benedict Cumberbatch thing and I was like, this has been a great night. This has been an absolutely perfect night.
That's what again. I'm miserable.
Yeah. It was an unmissable night.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, stage score may be the definition of missable, but you know, yeah, we have to. Yeah. We have to include those.
Well, that's what we
part.
Should do every week. We should have one thing that's missable. Maybe. Right.
Missable
that's
fluff.
The missable. Yeah. Missable.
We don't know in advance, but it was.
It was.
I think it was really good. I learned a huge amount, and also Russia is one of the places I feel like. You know,
they go on the Trans-Siberian Railway.
It's one of the
railway.
Most fascinating things. Yeah, exactly. One of the most fascinating.
J Lum did that as
places.
Well. I'm just saying.
Your loyalty to Joe Lum, I think, is clouding your appreciation
yeah,
of Simon
well.
Reeve.
Yeah. Mm. All right, Kay, how many stars are you going to give it then?
I'm giving it 3 stars.
Okay.
Three stars?
Yeah.
That is outrageous.
DWI. Deal with it.
Deal with it.
Boy, that is outrageous.
She's allowed to give it 3 stars. She's what? At least it's consistent with the review, with her review thoughts. I mean, you know, it would have been. I would have been more angry if she'd suddenly given it 4.
I just don't think it's a 3-star program. I just don't.
Well, I agree with you.
Maybe,
I'm giving it 4 as well.
Maybe I'll think about doing a pog poll and then falling asleep.
Anyway, so you're giving it 5.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Russia. It's a 3-parter. It starts on BBC Two. It's on 28th of September at 9 o'clock.
Not that Kay needs to know that. She won't be tuning in again. Unbelievable.
Because the Thursday, it's quite weird because most of the stuff's on a Sunday, isn't it? So that's why I mentioned that. Thursday.
Mixing stuff up.
Thursday, the 28th.
Revo.
Russia with Simon Revo. Simon Reeves, I might call it just to show I can get his name wrong. Like I have everyone else's.
Inconceivable Truth is my favourite.
Incontrovertible Truth.
That's my favourite thing you've got wrong this episode.
Anyway, it's time to start getting things right. It's question time. What time is it?
Question time. Oh, we didn't do this. Oh, maybe that's our new thing. Maybe
yeah,
we just say question
that.
Time.
Okay. Best.
It's quite a new thing.
Give my vocals a bit of a rest. Yes.
And we might come in under an hour if we manage to. Yeah.
And this has been Satsuma free, this podcast, hasn't it?
Yeah,
no vitamin C overdose for me today.
But Kay has been accompanied by some coconut water.
I can't believe you like that. That is vile, that coconut water.
Yeah, I don't like coconut water.
Yeah, I don't know what anyone likes.
No.
It's not the new Reeve loves it. Bathes in it.
You take that
suddenly
back.
You like it?
You take that back.
Anyway, in question time, the question is, bearing in mind that James Franco plays not one but 2 characters, twins, in Deuce, in The Deuce, what is your favourite James Franco thing? It can be a thing about him. It can be a film he's been in, a TV series he's been in, whatever you want. Franco.
Right, there was a point that is not audible, but Boyd pointed
Franco,
at me.
Tell
Franco.
Me.
Okay. My favourite thing that he's been, I actually went to see him on Broadway in Of Mice and Men.
Ooh.
And
with
Chris O'Dowd.
Chris O'Dowd.
And
Oh, wow.
It was sensational. And
well.
Yeah. And then afterwards, my lovely friend Claire Hepworth actually stalked James Franco for the rest of her trip to New York.
Brilliant.
And then went to like a private screening or something with him. Oh my god, it was insane. She just got completely obsessed with him. Yeah, because we waited outside afterwards when they come out. Yeah, he was amazing
of
in
his
there.
Hotel room.
Of his hotel room, yeah. No, of when
of
they come out,
door,
you know, when they come
door.
Out of stage door, and in,
yeah.
And when you go to something in Broadway, that's much more of a
it's
big
a thing. Yeah,
it's much
thing,
more of a
yeah.
big
it's getting
thing.
A big thing there here now as well. I think.
Yeah, we just don't have the good streets in the same way that they do. That they, you know, because
no,
they put
streets
up the barriers. They're just
yeah.
not.
No.
They're just not.
No.
Hey. It's true.
Oh, no, you're right.
It's true. They have better pavements.
Yeah.
Sidewalks.
Yeah. Kay, what's your favorite thing? I know you love James Franco because you really embrace this question.
He's got brown hair. It's my
do you
final
not like
answer.
James? Why are you such a hater this episode?
I do like James Franco. I mean,
what's
I mean,
your beef?
No, I'm indifferent. So I'd say brown hair, solid brown hair, and he's quite arty.
He is quite arty. I love him because he's got like he was an art student, wasn't he? He does
he falls asleep in his lectures. He does an acting school. Your favourite thing about James Franco cannot be that he's got brown hair.
But has he got brown hair?
No, actually, his natural colour isn't brown.
Ooh.
What colour is it?
It's blonde.
Is it? No.
No.
What are you talking about?
No, it's
look
not.
At, look.
What is your favourite thing
Inconceivable
he's been
truth
in?
Over there.
What is the thing, your favourite thing that he's been in? Oh, no, you really don't. You don't like him at all.
I've given my... Can we just accept my answer?
I'm accepting it. I'm
thank
accepting
you.
It. She's not a huge fan of Franco.
Okay. I'm just indifferent.
I love the Franco, and I love everything he's done pretty much, apart from when he co-hosted the Oscars, which was terrible.
Oh, with Anne Hathaway, that
with
was bad
that
times.
That was diabolical.
Yeah, that was bad.
But
still
I kind of like
hair.
The fact... Yeah, I mean, he has good... I like the fact that he even tried, but he was it
yeah.
was poor.
Also, Pineapple Express was a low point for him, I think.
I don't mind Pineapple Express.
Oh, no, I think that was a low.
I really like This Is The End. I like it when he plays himself. He plays himself, he's done that a few times, This Is The End. 30 Rock...
Oh yeah,
brilliant.
That's
brilliant.
Yeah, yeah,
in 30
yeah.
Rock.
Okay.
But my favorite is Freaks and Geeks, which is the thing that made him
Freaks
a star.
And Geeks, Michael
Freaks
Sarah.
And Geeks. Yeah. Oh. If you haven't seen it, you know, it was the Judd Apatow, Paul Feig, who went on to do Bridesmaids and loads of other great stuff.
Heat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was a thing about kids at school, and it was incredibly funny, and it only lost one season. Unbelievably, it was one of the best things ever been on American TV. And he was the star, and he was brilliant in it, and lovable, and, you know, kind of, he established his persona even in that. If you look at, you know, one episode of him being a bit of a kind of, like, flighty, you know, kind of slightly, how can we say it, you know, druggy figure.
There you have it. Of Mice and Men, Freaks and Geeks, and Brown Hair.
Mm. Brown Hair.
Your recommendations.
We've covered all the bases.
Yeah.
As ever. Thank you ever so much to Kay Ribeiro. I've got a new format point in the podcast.
Okay.
I should actually be inspired by the Empire podcast. Because at the end of that, they each say goodbye. Whereas I've been just saying goodbye on behalf, I've said, you know.
It has been presumptuous. We have talked about it.
Presumptuous. Yeah, so, it's a goodbye from me.
It's a goodbye from me.
And it's a goodbye from me.
And we'll be back next week. Thanks, bye.
Bye.